Well, dwarves, midgets, or people of short stature, as they might be called today, are often used in film and literature as symbolic references rather than as people with desires, hopes, and dreams. In Jane Sullivan's novel Little People, she dramatises the real-life visit of an American performance troupe to Australia in 1870. There's General Tom Thumb, Lavinia Stratton, Commodore George Washington Nutt, and Minnie Warren. But thrown into the mix of this novel is the full-statured and fictitious Mary Ann. She's been compromised as a governess and is pregnant without any means to support herself. Her salvation is to begin work for the troupe as a general dog's body. But Mary Ann then becomes entwined in the sinister dealings of those who wish to exploit her pregnancy and these little people. The book shows Sarah Lestrange asked Jane Sullivan whether she was thinking about the use of little people in film and literature when she was writing this novel.
Well, I suppose I was, but it wasn't quite as conscious as that. I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to redeem little people in the eyes of the world, or I'm going to show little people as they really are, or anything quite like that. It was just initially a fascination with these people and the fact that they were so enormously popular as they travelled around Australia to the point where they were actually getting mobbed like rock stars wherever they went. And then I had the thought, well, this must have been a very special time because you didn't see little people like this normally in your life at all. You couldn't turn on the television, you couldn't get onto YouTube, you couldn't actually see these people. So they must have been utterly extraordinary for the general populace to see. And then I also was fascinated by the idea of what it would be like to be these little people who had not only overcome what we would regard as a disability, but they'd actually turned it to their advantage and they'd made careers and become celebrities. And that was an extraordinary thought too. So all those things kind of fed together. So rather than thinking I'm going to do something in general for little people, I thought I'm going to do something that investigates these particular four little people and find out what made them tick, or at least what I imagine made them tick.
In my reading of your novel, Little People, though, I did feel like you were playing with that element, though, because yeah. of this almost carnival setting and playing on the idea that we're finding out about their backstories.
Well, that's right, because the way I've structured it, I've got the little people speaking in their own voices, but they're done in the form of what I call sideshows. So it is almost like they come on the stage and they perform for us, which, of course, is what they did all the time. So what they're saying is it's from the heart and it's true and it's what they feel, but it's also a kind of performance as if they're on stage. And they are very naturally very theatrical people. And General Tom Thumb in particular, he became a performer when he was only 4 years old, and I just think that is so extraordinary to start your career at that age. I mean, that makes him a kind of Michael Jackson figure in my eyes, and he must have been an extraordinary man in all sorts of ways. And in some ways I think he's quite a poignant character because he never really had a proper childhood. He was robbed of his childhood. He just jumped straight into being this man and this performer. So all that feeds into the characters of the little people, and so it's both meant to be a realistic appraisal of what these people could be like. And it's also playing on that idea of performance and showmanship and so on. So you're never quite sure what is real and what is a performance.
And at one point, one of the small statured people, so not quite as little as the littlest, he wants to run away from the circus.
Yes. Well, that was quite fun. And you can turn some of the cliches on their heads. We think of the circus as being this kind of glamorous area. And, of course, if you're just stuck with it and as this character is, he's the dog's body. You know, he just gets around putting up the apparatus and taking it down again. And it's nothing glamorous about his life at all. It's just hard work and not much reward. And the only thing he's there for is to protect his little brother. And so, the circus in his case is not glamorous at all.
Well, the story begins with Mary Ann, a young governess. She's of full stature and she's in Australia. She's pregnant. She's been cast out from her position as governess.
You've heard this story before, haven't you?
Desperate, she goes to the Yarra Yarra River, intending to plunge into the murky water. Instead, she ends up saving the life of General Tom Thumb, one of these little people, also known as Charlie. And she manages to become the all-round helper in the troupe of the four little people touring Australia. Now, you could have just told this story as the fictional story of the troop. Why did you insert this fictional character of Marianne into it? What did you want to do by doing that?
Well, I decided at quite an early stage that I wanted them to be observed by someone who is not herself a little person. I wanted to have that outside view as well as the inside view, but I also wanted someone who is going to be intimately involved with the troop in some way. And one of the keys that gave me the character of Marianne was the fact that the tour of Australia actually lasted 9 months. I thought, well, that's interesting. That's the same length of time as a pregnancy. I wonder if I can play with that in some way. And then I discovered that General Tom Thumb and his wife used to make a habit of having themselves photographed with babies as if the babies were in fact their own children, and they pretended that they'd had a child, whereas in fact they hadn't. And that gave me another idea that there would be some impending pregnancy, some baby in the offing somewhere that would in some way drive the plot. And the last thing I felt about Marianne was I wanted to make her a very sympathetic character whom the reader would identify with and would very much want to follow her fortune and would be very much hoping and praying that things come out well for her, because as you discover, as in any good melodrama, she's threatened by all sorts of dangers and you're never quite sure where it's going to come from next.
I thought she was a rather Jane Eyre sort of a character.
I was certainly thinking of Jane Eyre as one of my inspirations. I mean, she's not the same as Jane Eyre, obviously, but some of that idea of the young woman who comes up against all the slings and arrows that fortune can deal with her, really. And of course, in those days, if you had no money and no family and you were pregnant and you were unmarried, you were in a dreadful position. And yet she has enough gumption and enough sense and enough courage to have a good chance of overcoming all those odds, steep as they are, as they pile up against her.
And thus drives the story. Jane Sullivan, could you read from your novel, Little People? So this is when Marianne is meeting the sisters, Lavinia and Minnie.
Yes. This is Marianne speaking. Of course, I was curious about the little people. I had never seen any kind of little person, but I had touched one as we struggled by the Yarra Yarra and nausea rose when my fingers recalled the fishy wet skin. I thought of Mr. Quilp, the dwarf, in Mr. Dickens's book, with his hook nose and villain's smile. I fell asleep while sewing a glove, and I entered a hall where the perfect ladies and gentlemen in miniature stood on a high platform, their eyes level with mine, to judge me. They were not perfect. They were hunchbacked, and their limbs were stumps ending in claws. Their ruddy Toby Jug faces were wizened and crushed, and they wore smocks fit for madmen and women. They pointed at me and screeched like bats, "You must be tractable!" and threw out strings baited with hooks that caught in my clothes and drew me towards them. They would tie me down like Gulliver. I woke, the glove crushed in my hand. Then Mrs. Bleeker came to tell me it was time to meet the ladies, and I wanted to hide behind the curtains, but I scolded myself for such childish fears. In the sisters' boudoir, bright dresses, shawls and underwear lay strewn over the beds and furniture, amid an overpowering scent of lilacs. At the heart of scent and colour, the furled bud, was Mrs. Lavinia Stratton, her eyes fixed on mine. Imagine a society beauty and all the things people say about her. Tiny waist, lustrous black hair, exquisitely modelled neck and shoulders, velvet skin, finely shaped eyebrows and black eyelashes. Imagine hair loose, slim form wrapped in a Japanese robe of rose and white silk, dainty feet in matching rose slippers. Now, imagine she is just a fraction less perfect, cheeks a little too round and baby-like. Now, imagine she sips from the magic bottle labelled Eat Me, and she shrinks down, still in perfect proportion, until she is no taller than my hip. And this shrinking concentrates her beauty, as cordial sweetens the strawberry. Beside her was Miss Minnie Warren, a bonny fairy in a green silk wrap and green slippers, a little smaller, a little chubbier, hopping from one foot to the other. If she were not so close to her incomparable sister, and her own cheeks unfashionably ruddy, many would declare her a beauty in her own right. Lavinia, hands folded, could pass for a figurine, but Minnie was a blur of movement. Everything from her hair to her fingers was fly away.
Jane Sullivan reading from her latest novel, Little People. And then Marianne meets General Tom Thumb, a.k.a. Charlie, And littleness concentrates his wife, Lavinia's beauty, Marianne thinks, but for him, littleness concentrates his masculinity. There's a lot of play about sexuality of these characters as well, who are often thought of as childlike as well.
Yes, it's quite a sexy book in lots of ways, I think, and there is a strong sexuality at work in all four of the little people in different ways, and General Tom Thumb is a very virile character who has enormous hopes for his spermatozoa and what they might create, and he's very determined to have a son and heir in one way or another. His ego is very much bound up in his productivity and fertility, and he has all sorts of ideas about this. Lavinia, his wife, is a much more sexually reticent lady, timid and rather contained, but she's taught by her husband and she learns a few things. Minnie, the younger sister, is an absolute renegade and very keen on exploring her sexuality at a time and in a milieu where such a thing was utterly unheard of and thought of as quite impossible if you were an unmarried young lady. So she's up against tremendous odds, but she's very brave and very resourceful and she finds ways of doing it.
Well, and then there's Marianne and her sexuality, whether she's a vessel or a vestal, whether she's the Madonna or the whore, because General Tom Thumb has these ideas about the coming man, and he thinks that something happened when he was rescued by Marianne from the water.
It's all very mysterious, but it has to do with some theories about electricity and generation that were buzzing around at that time, and General Tom Thumb's theory is never quite spelled out to anyone, but we gather it has something to do with the fact that if animal magnetism forces come together in a mighty amount of water, then some miraculous kind of conception can take place.
And so, of course, I mean, this plays on the fact that Marianne's this single woman and she doesn't have many choices, but in terms of what she can do with her life, and she has to make a very difficult choice in this novel about her future and the future of her child. But in a sense, perhaps none of the characters in the novel have had many choices, having been, forced by their stature into the show business world.
Yes, I think you're right. Just about everyone in this novel has had rather limited choices, and due to their upbringing or their background or their actual things like their height have all had some influence on them. But what made a huge difference in the case of the little people was that they were discovered by P.T. Barnum, who was the great American showman and mentor.
And so he's a real character.
Yeah, he's a real character, yeah. And he could turn someone who was just a two-bit performer in a very humble circus into a huge celebrity. He had that power and he had that genius for promotion and what we would nowadays call spin doctoring. And he did it very, very cleverly. And so, thanks to him, these little people who we might see as being exploited in some ways, particularly General Tom Thumb when he was very young, only 4 years old when he began performing. But nonetheless, it was thanks to Barnum and thanks to their own efforts indeed as well that they become professional performers, very proud of what they do and enormously successful. And General Tom
presented
Thumb and
his to kings
wife
and queens.
Rich. Yeah, they're presented to royalty around the world, perform in front of crowned heads of Europe and so on. And when they came to Australia, they were on a world tour and they went just about everywhere that was anywhere in the world.
And they have a strong sense of dignity as well.
Indeed. And when we've used real photographs of the real little people in the book. And the thing that you notice when you look at these photographs is the extraordinary dignity of these people. They're not, well, they might be comical in some ways, but what you notice most is just this high seriousness they have and the very erect backs, very straight faces. And you can tell these are people who thought quite a lot of themselves, and rightly so.
Which kind of is part of something that you explore in the phrasing that you use. So we have the characters divided into the Lilliputians, the merely small, and the full-sized. And you're also playing on the idea of the size of someone's moral integrity and how we can relate that to someone.
Oh, that's very clever of you. I hadn't even spotted that myself.
Well, you talk about things like getting the measure of people and falling short of the measure. So it yes, has
I,
to be
I
there.
Do. I do have quite a few expressions to do with large and small. That's true. I hope I haven't overdone it, but there are a few like that. Yeah, because of course we do think of so many things in terms of size, don't we? You're getting larger and smaller, and so on. And inevitably, those expressions and metaphors came up all the time when I was writing. And I was thinking in terms of large and small, not just in terms of physical size, but also in terms of moral size or philosophical size or whatever you or whatever you might like to call it. So all those elements play in the book in some way.
And whether you can think yourself big as well.
And that's one thing that, Charlie, General Tom Thumb, is taught to do when he's very small, because his first thing that Barnum asks him to do is to strut up and down and show him how small he is. And so Charlie crouches down. He wants to make himself as tiny as possible. And Barnum says, no, you mustn't do that. If you want to show everyone how small you are, you must think big. You must show them how big you are. You have to stand up straight and strut and perform like a really big man. And that's what he does. So there's that paradox, if you like, of being small and also being big at the same time.
One of the more sinister characters in the novel is the fictional character Dr. Musgrave, who has a fascination with small dead things and likes to put them in jars. He's kind of a Bluebeard of sorts.
He's got elements of that sort of fairy tale bogeyman character, but he's also based on gentlemen collectors of the time who were quite fanatic in some cases about collecting preserved creatures in jars, pickled or stuffed or skeleton form or whatever. And there were some marvellous collections all over the world by these gentlemen collectors. And I had great fun looking up pictures of these particular creatures. And Dr. Musgrave's fascination is with the young. He likes collecting young creatures of various kinds. So he's got all sorts of collections of skulls and rather gruesome little figures in bottles. And he's very ambitious. And like a lot of collectors, he's quite insatiable. He's never going to have enough.
And for me, with the Dr. Musgrave character, he's part of that spectrum that puts little people on display. So we've got the spectrum of Barnum, mm-hmm. who, you know, he's not killing anyone, but he's using people, exploiting people for his own pocket. And then we have Musgrave, who is doing much worse than that. So it's representing a range of the freak show that you've got here.
Yes, the showmen of the time did do a lot of things that we would consider very unscrupulous and just plain wrong. It was par for the course. I mean, we're all familiar with the tragic stories of characters such as the Elephant Man, the most appalling tales of exploitation. And I've tried not to shrink from that. It did go on. I think the little people in my story were comparatively fortunate in that they didn't have the same degree of exploitation as some other people did. But yeah, there was a kind of amorality about the showman of the time, and Barnum had his own morality, I think. He made his own morality as he went along. He had all sorts of theories about when it's okay to humbug the public and fool them and so on. He says the public actually want to be fooled. It's all part of the show. And you've got to hand it to him. He's just so cheeky and he gets away with lots. Whereas someone like Musgrave and the kind of real people who inspired my idea of Musgrave, it's a more private thing. It's more a fascination with things that are no longer alive, whereas Barnum's very much interested in live things on the whole. So there is something a little creepy and ghoulish about that anyway, I think. And even though you can dress it up and say it's scientific, there's always that feeling, oh, why do you really want to have all these things hidden away in jars, you know? Why can't you just enjoy life as it is? And he was one of these people who used to kill butterflies when he was a boy and put them in a jar. And that's, although I know butterfly collectors are often very admirable people, there's something a bit spooky about that always worries me.
This book was published as a result of you being shortlisted for the Carl Scribe Fiction Award,
yes,
which is for writers over 35. I mean, so often we hear about the New Yorker 20 under 40 or the Granter Young Novelists of this year or whatever.
Well, that's right. People often talk about new writers and emerging writers as if they're all young. And of course, a lot of them are. And I'm absolutely all for encouraging young writers. I think it's a tremendous thing to do. But I'm also all for a prize like the Cal Scribe Fiction Prize, because there are a lot of us oldies around who come to writing fiction comparatively late in life for various reasons. We might have had a career doing something else, like I've worked for a long time in journalism, or we, in the case of women particularly, we might have been spending our time bringing up children. And many very famous writers haven't really hit their straps until they got into their 50s or 60s. And I just think it's wonderful that there's an award that encourages emerging writers who do turn to writing a bit late in life. It's great.
Jane Sullivan with the book show's Sarah Lestrange. Jane Sullivan is a literary columnist for The Age newspaper. Her first novel was The White Star. This book is her second novel, Little People, and it's published by Scribe.